I am a terrorist. Words are my tools, my weapons. Through them, my thoughts vibrate around your synapses. They infiltrate your mind. They invade your soul. You are the victim of my speech, a casualty of my dangerous talk.
Greetings, talkers. This is Dangerous Talk, and I'm your host, Stax. Today is a political show, since the Democratic primary in Pennsylvania actually exists for a change, and I happen to be in Pennsylvania. So, for me, this is a big deal, and I'll get into it, but the thing is, I put a blog on MySpace about this a few weeks ago, actually quite a few of them. I got some comments back from you guys, you dangerous talkers out there, and some emails here and there as well. And people supporting every candidate you can think of out there. And first, and in the headlines, actually, he's not really making headlines. He should for this, but he's not. Mike Gravel recently announced that he is leaving the Democratic Party and is joining the Libertarian Party, the party of Ron Paul. Well, actually, Ron Paul's actually a Republican. In any case, this move comes to quite a bit of a surprise, because Gravel's campaign hasn't really made much momentum as a Democrat. And his values are as progressive can be. I mean, he stands for gay marriage, which is certainly a great thing, and no other candidates really doing that. Well, I don't want to say no other. Most candidates aren't doing that. And, I mean, he's a secular guy, you know. I think he's a Unitarian, so that's basically an atheist, except, you know, a little bit of church in there mixed with the atheism. But, yeah, I mean, Mike Gravel, he looks like a dream candidate. So, what went wrong? Well, thing is, a lot of people are asking me, why won't I support Mike Gravel? And one, he has to fight a primary battle for the Libertarian Party. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's going to win the Libertarian Party nomination. Besides, even though Mike Gravel is not a libertarian, you know, as far as ideology is concerned, I think if the Libertarians had him on board, it would give them more momentum than I would like to see them have. I once thought that I might be a libertarian. In fact, WCHE host Randy Dasher, he once said that I was somewhat of a libertarian. And I think I'm a libertarian on social issues. But when it comes to money, I have issues with the libertarian perspective. I have issues with the idea that Americans shouldn't pay their fair dues and taxes. Don't get me wrong, I hate paying taxes just as much as everybody else does, but I see the necessity in paying taxes. What I would like to do is just make sure that money goes where it's used best and not towards a war that without end. But my point is that most libertarians, if they can save a couple of bucks here, they will. The problem is that sometimes saving money now costs more money later. 9/11 is a perfect example, and this was when Rudy was still running. I came across this story. Rudy Giuliani cut funding to emergency services. He didn't want to pay the money to move the command center out of the World Trade Center for emergency services. He wanted to be fiscally conservative. He wanted to be libertarian when it comes to money. And the problem with that is that because he saved a couple taxpayer bucks here, you know, it ended up costing 3,000 American lives just in 9/11, not to mention the thousands of lives that have followed since then as a result of that incident. And lives could have been saved that day had Rudy spent that money when he had that opportunity. So sometimes you have to spend money to prevent problems or to, you know, get a jump on problems. It costs more to fix a problem after a situation breaks down. So that I have issue with libertarians for that, and public schools is another thing. They don't like public schools. I love them. But that's a whole other thing. Back to Mike Gravel. As a libertarian, he doesn't have to carry on that ideology, obviously. But his any support for him would give credibility to that party. And that's dangerous. But I wasn't in favor of Mike Gravel before he made this move. So what were my issues with him then? Well, I agree with him on most of the issues. I think, though, he comes across very angry. And I know people say that about atheists, too. But the thing with Mike Gravel is that he criticizes, but he doesn't really have anything to add. And I'd like to see a plan from Mike Gravel. And maybe they're out there. Maybe I'm just not aware of it. But I'd like to see some plans. Also, diplomacy. Just from being in the few debates he was in, and I think it was a raw deal that he wasn't in all of them, by the way, and I will say that. He didn't seem diplomatic when he was yelling at the Democrats. And I would have liked him to, have called them out, but in such a way that maybe they would jump on board with his ideas. Question them. Why aren't you in favor of gay marriage? What is your issue, really? You don't hide behind faith. Really, what is the issue? If he would have come at it that way, it might have been more instructive, more presidential, if you will. So, while I agree with him on the issues, again, it's a character issue for me. And that's an issue that, I don't know, he doesn't really hold for me. The other thing is, he doesn't have an overall message, an overall agenda. And I think if you're going to be kind of a radical candidate, or third-party candidate, or even like a radical branch of the mainstream candidates, you have to have an angle. And he didn't seem to have an angle, except being the old angry guy. And that wasn't an angle enough. He wasn't creating a movement. There is no Mike Gravel movement out there. I mean, there are supporters of his, but he has no real movement. I have to hand it to the Ron Paul wackos. They have a movement. They do. I don't agree with it, but it's there. When Howard Dean ran in 2000, that was 2004, sorry. When Howard Dean ran in 2004, he had a movement. He created, Dean for America, which later turned into Democracy for America. That became a movement. They're a block within the Democratic Party that carries some weight. When DFA endorses a candidate, like Dennis Kucinich, candidate still loses, but at least it people pay attention a little bit more. It has, especially if you go on the smaller scale, on the county level, if a DFA endorses a Democratic candidate for state representative, and the other candidate on the Democratic ticket primary is not endorsed by that, the DFA candidate will probably win. On the local level, DFA is very strong, and they've created a movement, true to Dean's philosophy, a 50-state movement within the Democratic Party. They're a significant swing. And Kucinich, when he ran in 2004, he also created a movement, Progressive Democrats of America. And even though Kucinich ran in 2008 and he lost, Progressive Democrats of America still stands. And between DFA and PDA, they're a significant swing on local candidates. And I think that's very important. And maybe if Gravel would either help to bring those two organizations together or form a new organization, that could be combined in that sense, maybe he could get some traction. I think that's important. But I don't know. Those are my thoughts on Mike Gravel. You may disagree. You may agree. Let me know, because I'm curious. The next candidate I want to talk about is Ralph Nader. Now, quiet down, talkers. I have to talk about him. He is running as a candidate. A lot of you think that he stole the 2000 election. I will disagree with you, and I'll tell you why. I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. And people say, well, you know, you stole the, he stole votes from Gore. He didn't steal any votes from Gore. Okay, I wasn't going to vote for Gore if Nader wasn't in the race. I would have voted for Mickey Mouse. I did not like Al Gore. I did not like him for a lot of reasons. One is his wife. Tipper Gore is anti-freedom, and that makes Al Gore anti-freedom. Now, Al Gore has come a long way since not being in politics. And now, I probably agree with him much more because he's come around to our side on things. He's more progressive now than he was then. He's more interested in the environment. I mean, he was always interested in the environment, but he was never doing anything about it. Well, I don't want to say that. No, he was doing stuff, but not legislatively. And I didn't get the impression he was going to. It wasn't a particularly strong position when he was running. He never really hammered that point home. So, you know, I had my issues with Gore. Also, I think Gore was a little wussy-whipped, if you will, because, you know, he was very reactionary. The Republicans said, oh, Al Gore's too pale. So the next day he comes out with clown makeup on stage. Oh, Al Gore's like a robot. So the next day he passionately kisses his wife on stage. And it was too reactionary. And people say, well, if Al Gore was president, we wouldn't be in this war. I disagree. If Al Gore was president, yes, we would. Because the Republicans would have trumped up the same propaganda bullcrap that they did this, you know, to the American people. And they would have presented it to Al Gore and said, if you don't do something about this, we're all dead. And Al Gore would have said, well, let's think about it a little bit. And they would have said, wussy, 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 until he would have said, okay, let's go in. So we would have absolutely gone in. When you had the Republican talking heads calling Al Gore a wuss, you know, just like when they called him pale or robotic, he's going to swing back reactionary. And he would absolutely have taken us into this war. And once we got in, it'd be very difficult to take us out. Like it is now. So absolutely, we would have been involved in this war. But anyway, back to that. If the thing with Nader, people say Nader stole Al Gore's votes. No. If Al Gore had earned those votes, then there wouldn't be an issue. I wouldn't have voted for Al Gore because he didn't earn my vote. Nader did that year. He's not going to earn my vote this year, though. But he did earn my vote in 2000, and I will defend my vote for Ralph Nader in 2000. So sorry, a lot of party people who think Nader ruined the election. He didn't. And why has Ralph Nader not earned my vote this year? Well, at this point, he is trying to run a top-down party. It's not even a party. I don't even know what... Is he running as a Green? I'm not even sure he is. But he's trying to run this top-down movement that has no traction. And it seems like he's got the name recognition. And you want to run once to increase that name recognition and to kind of bring the Green Party to prominence. Sure, I get that. Then what you got to do is use that run to propel Green Party candidates on the local and congressional levels to get candidates into politics from the Green Party. Then you can build a movement. Then you can build this 50-state movement kind of thing that PDA and DFA have, and kind of build from there. But Nader didn't do that. Instead, he's running for president, and he knows he's not going to win, and that's fine. I'm okay with long-shot candidates, but I want to see a movement, and he is not giving me a movement. He is just running on his... I mean, I said this to a dangerous talker through email, that he's running on his ego. And I don't mean that... I mean, Nader has done a lot for America, and a lot of people don't realize how much he's done for America. But the fact of the matter is, instead of building a movement like Ross Perot tried to do and failed. He's just running on his own, not carrying a party, not trying to create a party, just running. And after a while, you keep running, and what are you running to exactly? What's your purpose in running? And I think Nader lost his purpose. I think he really did. So I'd like to see that. I'd like to see a third party being built from the ground up. And I think, you know, you have groups like DFA and PDA, and maybe Gravel could help do this. And from the grassroots, build them up. And libertarians have gone a long way in doing this, and so has the Greens. But they're not quite there yet. They need something to push them over. They need some high-profile candidates to push them over. And Nader could have been that candidate for the Greens. And Gravel could be that for the libertarians. But Gravel's philosophy and the libertarian philosophy don't jive, so I don't see that working out for Mike. But for Nader, he does fit with the Green Party platform. And he could absolutely help that to work. But instead, he's throwing a ton of money at a race that he can't win and he can't get anything out of for the Green Party. So I don't see the point. And now I'm going to move on to the big two on the Democratic side. Up first is Barack Obama. And first, let me make this perfectly clear. Barack Obama is not a progressive. Not a progressive. I have to say, I am not a Barack Obama fan. For starters, I don't like how he's trying to pretend to be a progressive. He is not a progressive. And I think that should be clear. You know, he's got a lot of people thinking that he's something that he's not. He has basically a three-part message. Part one is he wants to bring change. Part two is he wants to restore hope. Now, before I get to three, I want to talk about parts one and two. He wants to bring change. Bravo for him. What exactly does he want to change? Unfortunately, he hasn't said. He keeps saying different things, but he hasn't said specifically what he wants to change. It seems like the only thing he wants to change is he wants to restore hope. Well, that's great, but how do you restore hope? By bringing change, of course. And how do you bring change? By restoring hope. It's like a Who's On First skit gone wrong. I don't understand how talking about change and hope without having any real substance into your message can mean squat. I heard somebody compare him to Bobby Kennedy. I'm sorry, but Barack Obama is no Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy, number one, was a progressive. Number two, had a record of being, of bringing change, and had a record of being hopeful. And I don't see that with Obama. Which brings me to number three. The third part of Obama's message is to get everybody together and sing Kumbaya. That's right, get the religious right together, because we have to bring them involved here, and sit down with the drug companies and the special interests and all, hold hands and sing Kumbaya. That does not sound like a plan to me. It does not sound like he has any idea what he's talking about. It's rhetoric. It's empty rhetoric. I'm sorry, but when someone wants to hold hands with the religious right and compromise, my answer is no. Absolutely not. I will not compromise American freedom with the religious right. I'm sorry. I believe in fair compromises, but they're not willing to compromise. We can't compromise with them. We just can't. Not now. We have to fight for our values right now. We have the power to do that, and we have to use it. Because if we compromise and we work with the religious right, all right, they will get some immediate things done, but they'll win the long term. Because they know how to strategize that way. and Barack Obama does not. Then when they're in power, in the next election cycle, they won't compromise. Just like when Bush had Congress, he didn't compromise either. Nancy Pelosi's doing a lot of compromising now, but when Bush had the Congress, he didn't compromise one bit. And he wasn't planning to. Now that he's lost Congress, of course he wants to compromise. Now that the religious right no longer have the hammer of Bush and a Republican Congress, now they want to compromise all of a sudden. They're not going to compromise. They just want a little bit. They're going to keep plugging away, getting a little bit of our freedoms every day. And this guy, Barack Obama, wants to sit down and sing Kumbaya with them? Hell no. Uh-uh. I don't think so. That is not my idea of a good plan. I'm sorry. And I know a lot of people have drank the Obama Kool-Aid, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. He does some good prepared speeches. I'll give you that. When he has a prepared speech, they're pretty inspiring. Unfortunately, I find them kind of hollow. And in debates, or when asked questions on the cuff, he seems to stammer, almost as much as George W. Bush. I can't believe the stutters that come out of this guy, and he's supposed to be eloquent? Now, I'm not eloquent. I'll grant you that. I stutter a lot sometimes when I'm talking. My mind thinks faster than my mouth does. But I can't say that I consider him eloquent. I consider him eloquent when he's reading off a teleprompter. But that's about it. And, yeah, I'm sorry. And then, you know, the fact that he's empty of details, that frightens me. That he doesn't seem to know what's going on. He doesn't know the intricacies. And I don't either. But then again, I'm not running for president. He is. And the final, oh, and there are a couple other things, too, that bother me about Barack Obama. The religious left. He has this idea of restoring faith to the Democratic Party, bringing the faithful back to the party. I don't want the faithful in my party. I'm sorry, I don't. I understand they have to be there, but you know what? If it were my way, it would be the highway. But no, not Barack Obama. He gave a speech, what they call his faith speech. And he basically invited the creation of a new religious left. And I have an issue with that. Because here's the thing. One, Obama grew up in a somewhat secular home, from my understanding. So immediately when I heard he was running and I heard of his secular upbringing, I was encouraged. But because he fears being called a Muslim, he has to now be uber Christian. And the only way to get rid of the Muslim stigma is to grow a Christian stigma. And I don't like that either. Get that crap out. I don't want, I don't tolerate that from the Republicans. I sure as hell am not tolerating that from the Democrats. I'm sorry, but I don't want the religious left involved in politics. And you may not believe this, but he says right on his website that he intends to have a to have more substantive discussions about the role of faith in American life. And when he means American life, he means political life. And when he means faith, he means the religious left. Obviously, well, and possibly even some of the religious right. He's hoping that in the general election, all his talk about faith will bring over some of the religious right, because the religious right have no love for John McCain. But I'm sorry, that's not what I would support. I cannot in good conscience support the creation of a religious left. I'm glad we don't have one that's really hardcore focused and in power. And I don't want one. I don't want to see one created. And then there's Oprah. Oprah. She called Barack Obama the one. As in Neo from The Matrix. The one. The chosen one. That's right. Barack Obama is the second coming, according to Oprah. He is the one. to me, that is scary. Very scary. I don't like this idea of non-reason involved in politics, non-facts, non-knowledge. I don't want this idea of a religious zealot with charisma gaining power off of my vote. I won't vote that way. I'm sorry. And I don't know what I'd do or what I'm going to do when Barack Obama becomes the candidate, because he probably is at this point. I mean, he's leading after all. And I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, from his camp saying that Hillary should step down. I don't think she should. But I'll get into that shortly. But, you know, it's just, it bothers me because he seems so much like a preacher. Even him, when he speaks, he seems like he's giving a sermon. And it bothers me. It scares the crap out of me, I gotta tell you. And that leaves us with Hillary Clinton. Also, by the way, not a progressive. Hillary is not a progressive. But here's the difference. She's not pretending to be. She's under no illusion or delusion that she's a progressive. Certainly there are some values she is progressive about, just as Barack Obama is progressive about some values. But she is not a progressive. She is a mainstream, middle-of-the-road Democrat, just like Barack Obama. In fact, their voting records are identical. Now, I have some issues with Hillary. The first being that she was anti-video game violence, and she wanted to censor video games. To me, that's bad. Anti-free speech, I'm not about that. Then, back in 2005 and 2006, I sent a bunch of requests to different senators' offices in D.C. to have meetings with them or their legislative aides about the Broadcast Decency Act. Hillary was the only office that said, sorry, you can't meet with our legislative aide because you're not from New York. And that kind of bothered me because I met with the two from New Jersey and the two from Pennsylvania. But I also requested meeting with others, and due to time schedules, we couldn't work things out. John Edwards, by the way, who was senator, one of the, I think it was 2004, he was willing to meet with me, but I didn't get that message until it was too late, unfortunately. But yeah, I think that says something that she wasn't willing to meet with me, or even have her legislative aides meet with me, and that bothers me personally. But on the other hand, I have to look beyond my personal issues with Hillary Clinton and look at the actual issues. Most of the issues, I mean, she agrees with Barack Obama on most of the issues, except that she is a little bit more specific about what she's going to do and spells out these things. And that's pretty obvious in the debates. And it's pretty clear that she knows what's going on. And that, to me, is very impressive. And it's not because of her years in the White House necessarily, but I think it has something to do with that. You know, people, oh, she was first lady, who cares? But first ladies have always had a vital role in the presidency. You know, even back all the way to John Adams. Abigail Adams had a huge role in the presidency, and so did many other first ladies. So don't dismiss her experience as first lady just because, you know, it's couched that way as first lady. She had a lot of experience there. And, I mean, that had a lot to do with her rise to the Senate. It wasn't everything. I mean, name recognition certainly had a lot to do with it, and so with money and a lot of other issues. But she does have a fair amount of experience under her belt, and she's familiar with the issues, and that proves the experience in my opinion. Now, why do people hate her? I don't know. I dislike her because she's a middle-of-the-road Democrat. But on the other hand, I do like that she knows the issues, and she's not so far she's not whipped like Gore or Kerry were. You know, she'll take a Republican issue every now and then, but she'll stand her ground. She's smart enough not to be fooled by the religious right. And that, to me, gives her a lot of street cred. But why do people hate her? I don't know. Republicans hate her. I know that. And, you know, they're not going to vote for her anyway. No matter, you know, they could put up, you know, the wacky, the most liberal Republican there is. Oh, wait, they have. And they'd still vote for John McCain over any Democrat. So it doesn't really matter if Republicans hate her. In fact, that's greater publicity for her, you know. But why is it that there are Democrats that hate her? Because she plays dirty politics a little bit? I'll grant you that. But that if Barack Obama can't stand that, he's going to be lost against the Republicans. So, you know, I'll forgive the dirty politics here and there. Because it's politics. Now, that's not how I would run a campaign if I were running, but I'm not running right now. And, you know, I understand her position on that. But I don't really understand why there are Democrats that hate her so much. I've heard people say that if she were the candidate, they would vote for, you know, Nader or whatever. But I don't really think that that's true. I don't think they would vote for Barack Obama either. I personally, I don't know if I can stomach voting for Barack Obama. Maybe. I barely stomached voting for John Kerry and campaigning for John Kerry. And I knew that was a mistake. But I did think he was going to win by a landslide, and I was very wrong. And my wife will never let me live that one down. But anyway, getting back to Clinton, I don't understand why people hate her. And maybe some of you dangerous talkers who hate her could tell me. You know, send me an email, put it in a blog, whatever, I don't care. Let me know, because I really want to know. Now, this is something that I want to talk about, too. Last week, Chelsea Clinton came to Westchester University, my old alma mater, and I got to go to that event, and I asked her, well, everybody was asking her questions, what's your mom's policy on this? What's your mom's policy on that? And to her credit, she was pretty good and was very specific about what her mom's policies were on these things. More specific than Barack Obama is on his policies, I might add. But I was pretty impressed by her knowledge of her mom's policies. But I thought it was kind of a waste to ask her questions about her mom's policies. You can look that crap up on CNN. You don't need... I mean, Chelsea Clinton is here. There's got to be something more that we can ask her about. So I was able to ask a question, and my question to Chelsea Clinton was, what issues is she passionate about, and what role does she intend to have in her mother's administration? And I thought that was a good question because I remember when her father was president, and I was young, you know, I was a teen. Chelsea's 5 years younger than I am. And I was young, and I was wanting a young person to kind of galvanize young people and get us fired up about politics. And I was hopeful that Chelsea Clinton would do that, and she didn't. She disappeared. You never really heard anything about her. She never gave any speeches, never stumped, never, you know, really... did anything. I mean, she didn't go to MTV. You know, this was when MTV was a big thing. And she didn't really... I was disappointed in her lack of ability to galvanize young people. And so I was hoping that maybe this time around, now that she's older, she's 28 now, that maybe she would be willing to take on some issues. Even Jenna Bush has taken on some issues. I mean, if Jenna Bush can do it, surely Chelsea can, right? Chelsea's like 50 times smarter than Jenna Bush, 100 times. But Chelsea's answer was disappointing to me yet again. She said, well, she's got a lot of issues she's passionate about, and she didn't name a single one. And then she went on to talk about how she has an apartment in New York, you know, a job, in finance, a boyfriend, a dog, and after the campaign is over, she intends to return back to those things, even if her mom wins. And that was kind of sad to me because I really want somebody to go out there and, you know, a first kid to kind of galvanize young people about politics. You know, break that string of apathy. Sadly, it doesn't seem like Chelsea Clinton will be that one. When Kerry was running, Vanessa Kerry came to Westchester, and I talked to her as well. And Vanessa Kerry is much older, or even if she, I don't know if she's much older, but she seems much older. She's in a different stratosphere as far as maturity goes, I guess. And so she would not have been right to galvanize young people. But, you know, that was then. I was hopeful that Chelsea would. But anyway, she wasn't. And later that day, they were opening up the Hillary headquarters in Chester County. And I used to be involved in Chester County politics, so I stopped over there and I got to talk to her a little bit more about that. And, you know, I told her I really hoped that she would be more involved and, you know, kind of spearhead some issues and really take charge. But she didn't seem all that interested in that, so that's sad. But I will say that she was a very bright girl, or woman, I guess now, very classy. And, you know, I just wish she would be more involved. That's all. I wonder if any of Barack Obama's children will be coming out on the stump, because I'd like to have some questions for them, too. I'd like to see, you know, I want to know how involved they would be if Barack Obama were president. You know, to me, I think that's an important thing. I could be wrong. Oh, there's one more thing I want to talk about Barack Obama, and maybe more than one more thing, but one more coming to mind right now. And that is that he's running on this thing that he was against the war from the beginning. And this is his big line against Hillary, because Hillary voted for the war at the beginning, you know, and Barack Obama voted against the war from the beginning. But here's the thing. I don't think that's true. Barack Obama hasn't voted against the war from the beginning, because he didn't vote when that was the case. What was his position? Was he against the war from the beginning? That's not really even true either, because that implies from start to now and everything in between. I would say it would be more accurate to say that Barack Obama was against the war at the beginning. I think that would be an accurate statement. But since that time, he, like Hillary Clinton, has voted to fund the war continuously, every time. He has supported this war every time it has come up for a vote. And so I don't think it's right for him to say he's against the war from the beginning, which implies from the start all the way up till now, because that's not really true. And I know he was talking about how he wants our troops to be safe, you know, have the right body armor and stuff, but the funds that he was allocating to the war didn't go towards body armor. It went to Blackwater. So even that, you know, he has the power as a senator to force the issue, and so does Hillary. And neither one of them have. And, you know, maybe, I don't know how successful they would be, but they could have taken a stand that kind of let the voters know that they mean, that they're actually doing something, that they're putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak. They're putting their reputations on the line. And I will say, Chelsea handled a question like this at the rally that I went to where she was speaking. And she did say that, you know, Hillary did go to the Pentagon and demanded some information on stuff, and they refused to tell her. This made a big news story at the time, too. And I would have liked to have seen Barack Obama do something like that. Now, sure, you can call it a political stunt, and it, you know, it probably was. But on the other hand, it showed that she was doing something, that she was making an effort at least. And that's more than Barack Obama has done. All he's done is say that he was against the war from the beginning. But he hasn't done anything against the war. He hasn't done anything to bring our troops home. And then, you know, then you talk about the Patriot Act. Oh, man, I can't believe I forgot about the Patriot Act. Oh, I don't think Barack Obama was in the Senate to vote for the Patriot Act. If he was, he would have voted for it. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I know that. My crystal ball, dangerous talk crystal ball, almost never wrong. Barack Obama has said that he supports the homegrown terrorism bill. That is basically the Patriot Act 2, which is, you know, the bigger sequel blockbuster, you know, more special effects, more freedoms taken away, you know. And he supports this, and he stands by that decision. The homegrown terrorism bill would basically make it illegal, make you a terrorist for disagreeing with the president. That, I mean, it's a little more to it than that, but that, I mean, that's pretty much the gist of it. That means you could be arrested for disagreeing with the president or for being critical of the administration. And Barack Obama supports that. I honestly don't know if Hillary supports it or not. I would guess she probably does. But what bothers me is Barack Obama is pretending to be this, you know, freedom fighter, this civil rights champion. And it's hollow. It's so hollow because he's supporting this bill, which is the antithesis of what civil rights is all about. And I would guess that, you know, he would have voted for the Patriot Act. He hasn't done squat to repeal the Patriot Act, being in the Senate. He's in power, and Hillary hasn't either. Neither one has. But here's the thing. When you're in power, you can at least try to do something. And I'll call your attention to Dennis Kucinich, who actually tried to do things in the Senate, in the House. I mean, he actually, while he was running for president, pushed bills to impeach both the president and the vice president. You know, I think that's telling. I think it's telling that he pushed these bills, that he pushed this bill to get us out of Iraq, that he pushed these things, that he was out there doing something. And he wasn't just saying empty words, that he followed them up with actions. And unfortunately, Dennis Kucinich isn't in this race anymore. Now, hopefully, he will still win his congressional seat, and that is a tough battle for him. So I am asking all you dangerous talkers to keep supporting his campaign to stay in the House of Representatives, where he can fight for freedom the way he's been fighting for freedom. But I can't buy into this Barack Obama's a progressive thing. I can't buy into he's the next Bobby Kennedy. I'm sorry. I can't. I don't mean this show to be a rant against Barack Obama, but I can't, you know, say how great Hillary is, because in all honesty, she's just a moderate. She, you know, if there was a real progressive running against her, I'd vote for the progressive, but there's not. And, you know, I think Hillary Clinton is the best candidate on the market right now. And if she's out, I don't know who I'm going to vote for. But, you know, I have endorsed her right now. And I wish I could endorse someone who's a little bit more progressive. But you know what? I'm hopeful that Hillary Clinton will come around. I like the fact that she's got a pair of balls. Something Barack Obama doesn't have with his sitting down with the religious right and singing Kumbaya. I don't get that. I'm sorry. Sorry. All right. Sidetrack. Bill Clinton, asset or hurt to Hillary Clinton's campaign? This is a big question everybody's always asking. Asset. The few times they said Bill Clinton blew up at reporters, I thought he did a good job. I saw those videos on YouTube, and I was like, good going, Bill. You put that guy in his place. You know, I remember there was a video where I guess he sat down with some guy from Fox, and he let that guy have it. And I thought, right on. So, yeah, I don't think he got overly angry. I think he was fair. He was fair and balanced, you might say. But, yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with him. Balance the budget. I think, you know, he would definitely be involved in the administration. And I think that would be interesting to see what a first gentleman, you know, would look like in a country, in this country. I think that would be change. That would be hope. First gentleman. So I'm curious about that. I'm curious about how the media would play that. If first gentleman would even be his title, I assume it would be. Makes sense, but, you know, who knows? So, you know, I'm kind of curious about that. I've always been a fan of Bill Clinton. I didn't vote for him, ever. But, because the first time he ran, I voted for Perot, and the second time I voted for Nader. But, I think it was Nader, right? Yeah, I think it was Nader. But in any case, you know, I like Bill Clinton. I think most Democrats do, and except if they've drinking the Obama Kool-Aid, then anything with the Clinton name is mud. Yeah, I mean, sure, he couldn't keep his you know, his winky in his pants, but neither could Elliot Spitzer. It's a whole other story. You know, politicians, you know, sex scandals and politicians, they go hand in hand. The only time it bothers me is if they're hypocritical about it, you know? Like, Elliot Spitzer was a little hypocritical, and, you know, early on I supported him, now I don't. Because Elliot Spitzer went after prostitution rings, and that wasn't cool, considering he was having a little something-something on the side. Mostly it's the religious right that are anti-sex, and then they're the ones that get caught, or anti-gay, and then they're the ones that end up being gay. You know, it's the hypocrisy of it that bothers me. Bill Clinton getting a little something-something on the side? I don't care. John F. Kennedy getting something-something on the side? I don't care. You know, doesn't matter to me. Thomas Jefferson getting a little something on the side? I don't care. Ben Franklin? Maybe. These historians are disputing this now. It used to be common knowledge that he got a lot of tail, but now it seems like maybe he just flirted a lot. We don't know. Historians are still looking into that one. But still, great American. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with him having an affair. So Bill Clinton, putting a cigar up Monica's, doesn't matter to me, you know, as long as he's balancing the budget and keeping us safe, I don't care. You know, keep fighting for freedom. That's what matters to me, not what he does behind closed doors. Same thing with Elliot Spitzer. If Elliot Spitzer hadn't gone after the prostitution rings, I wouldn't have a problem with him. Not at all. Be fine. Oh, well. Now it's time for announcements. you can email the show at dangeroustalk@gmail.com. Please, I would love to hear your opinions on politics, on religion, on any of the things we discussed on today's show or any future shows. I'm hoping to have another show with Greg Cooper from the last show. And if you have any questions that you would like me to ask him, send me an email. Let me know what they are. Because I think Greg and I may do a series of shows or something. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll see how it goes. One show at a time. You can listen to this show and all of our past shows on Dangerous Demand, which you can get to through dangeroustalk.net or through the MySpace page. We have a Dangerous Demand player, and you can put a Dangerous Demand player on your MySpace page, or I think Facebook, too. We do have a Facebook page, too. Well, MySpace is MySpace.com/DangerousTalk, and Facebook is also Facebook.com/DangerousTalk. And I'm not a big fan of the Facebook. I do have a page, and please, if you're there, add me. That's great. But I don't do much on the Facebook. I do a lot on the MySpace. Got a lot of friends on the MySpace. We do a daily blog on the MySpace. Please subscribe to the daily blog. Check it out every weekday and comment. I'd love to hear comments on that. Your thoughts. The daily blog is different than the columns were, in that the columns were are more preachy, I guess. And daily blogs are, you know, I'm trying to get your input. You know, and sure, I want your input on the columns too, but the daily blogs are shorter because I'm looking more for, you know, your input more. So please, you know, check out the daily blogs. Check out the editorial columns on DangerousTalk.net. We have a bunch of people who write them, not just me. Mike from the A-Team writes a modest proposal. You know, we got a bunch of other... Let me go through them real quick. I got to wait for it to boot up. I write Common Sense. Silent Steve Stories. He write. You can go to his website, too, oneoveralpha.com for Silent Steve Stories. Sean Philly from the Rational Response Squad writes... The Way of the Atheist, and I think he has a website too, but I don't remember what it is. But anyway, I'm sure you can find him on the Rational Response Squad website. Secular Spice, also known as Janice Rail, she is, I think she's retired from the activism, but she still has some of her columns on here, so you can check that out. My brother Mike from the A-Team, as I mentioned, Modest Proposal, his page is myspace.com/... Atheist Team, I think. Geekology 101. Casey Petit, our resident actress / somewhat porn star nude model. she writes that one, and she has a website, Casey Rules the World, Casey with a K, and she's creating a new website, which is in the works, called Super Casey, I think. I think that's what it's called. And, my good friend Tom Meredith is our lone Christian. He writes The Religious Middle, and you can check that out, and let me know what you think. I think it's important to have someone like Tom on there to sort of give balance. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find atheists on Christian websites having columns, but I feel that it makes sense to have a Christian on an atheist website, and I would like to have... You know, atheists have columns on Christian websites, but I don't think they'll go for that. It's just not in their cards. Anyway, we also have the YouTube page, which is youtube.com/dangerous talk. I have a bunch of videos on there on politics and religion. And I haven't made a YouTube video in a while, and been thinking about what my next video will be, and I'm not really sure yet. And, you know, when something strikes me, I'll put one up. Also, the thing is, well, we do have I can't believe I forgot about this. Our video intro, the intro to this show, which you'll also hear at the closing of the show, we have a video done by Glenn, who is an expert in just about everything. The guy is just multifaceted genius, and he created this video for our intro. 30-second video, and it is fantastic. So go to the YouTube page and check it out and comment on it and everything else, because he did a fantastic job. So anyway, we got that. We have a bunch of competitions and projects. We have the Most Dangerous Song competition and the Most Dangerous Art competition. You can vote on those on DangerousTalk.net. And projects, the Halloween Forever project, where you can, if you're ever in a costume and would like to take a picture of you holding the Dangerous Talk logo or one of your friends, please send us that. We'll put that in that section. The reason why you're holding the logo is, one, publicity for the website, but two, because I want to prove that it's you and you didn't just like take a picture of somebody randomly and, you know, send it to me. Oh, this is me. You know, we got to, that way we have it a little bit there. Also, that goes triple for the Free Them for Freedom project, which you can go to dangerousTalk.net and find out all about that. That's open only to women. And I know there is a bunch of projects I haven't gotten to. The Gay Kissing Project, I haven't gotten to that one. There's a bunch of them. they're in the works, and they'll be in the works for a while. We also have our normal photo gallery. So if you just want a candid, you know, if you're out and around and you want to support Dangerous Talk, have somebody take a picture of you holding the Dangerous Talk logo and send it in to us. We'll put it on the website. We got a bunch of stuff on in the photo gallery, even from when we went to the Rational Response Squad headquarters. That was a bunch of pictures taken there, too. That was pretty cool. We also have our supermodels, or spokesmodels, I should say. Super spokesmodels. Starting with Erin, Jackie, and Sarah. And you can check their pictures out in the photo in the photo gallery of DangerousTalk.net and also in the photos section of Dangerous Talk on the MySpace. So definitely check those out. Shout outs to the Rational Response Squad, rationalresponders.com, and freethoughtforums.org. Definitely, and I could go on. There's like a million atheist websites, and they're all excellent sources, but I can't shout them all out. So those are the only two I'm shouting out today. Check out the Dangerous Store, where you can buy Dangerous Talk t-shirts and stuff. You can donate to the show, but I wouldn't recommend it. Now, that seems kind of odd. Most people who do shows, especially religious people, they go, donate to the show. We need your money, you know. And there's one atheist, one Christian show, rather, that makes a ton of money off their show, and they have less listeners than I do, and it makes me sick. But no, I do not want you to donate to me. I have the button there, but when I first started it, I put it up there. But now I decided I do not want you to donate to me. Instead, I want you to donate to Atheists for Autism Research or to the Reason Project, which is Sam Harris's project, or the Richard Dawkins Foundation or the Rational Response Squad. Someone other than me or the ACLU be a good place. Other places. So, you know, those are things out there for you to donate to. And as I mentioned, you know, Atheists for Autism Research is the charity that we put together through Autism Speaks, and it is definitely a worthy cause to support. And you can get Atheists for Autism Research t-shirts, too. It's a long website, but you can find it. Just Google that, and it's on Cafe Press, and I'm selling those shirts at cost because they're for charity. So there you go. And you can get those shirts and go to your autism events in your area through Autism Speaks, and wear them around, and you know, see what kind of reactions you get from them. There you go. That's it for this show. Next show, I'll probably have Greg Cooper on again, not necessarily, but probably. And let me know your thoughts. And stay dangerous. See you next time.
I am a terrorist. Words are my tools, my weapons. Through them, my thoughts vibrate around your synapses. They infiltrate your mind. They invade your soul. You are the victim of my speech, a casualty of my dangerous talk.